Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
ELC. Yeah, there it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are so glad you joined us for
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're experiencing the madness. Maybe you're one of the elite. Maybe you're one of the sweet. Maybe you're one of the final. Maybe you just need a break and you need 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness in your ear holes. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those patrons, they bring this show to you. Their support, their generosity makes this show possible. Without them, we wouldn't be here. In exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bunch of bonus content, extra conversations with developers, spoiler chats. You got extra shows like Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games. You've got the Wednesday paid DLC program where we're talking about what the patrons want to talk about. This week, we get into the sticky topic of cotton candy. Oh, it gets funny and weird. You got to be a patron. You got to hear it. Check it out at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who can do almost anything with rhythm, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I have no elaborate story or narrative, but I can jump through this circle.
It's harder than you think.
It's harder than you think.
Yeah, it's harder than you think. Hey, we got a big show for you. We're kind of obliquely talking about the Nintendo Direct that happened this week. It's maybe possibly the dying throes of the Switch One. We're going to dig into all of that. We got some big games to talk about. Christian got hands-on with the new Doom. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got an awesome guest to do it with. You know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm excited because DLC stands for Dedicated to Leisure Creatures. Because we have editor and host at Console Creatures, Bobby Pascialidis, joining us for the first time. Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. And also, thank you for getting my name right, because everyone always gets it wrong.
Yeah, so, I imagine that, I'm in a similar boat sometimes. It means a lot to me.
It does, right? But yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I mean, I've been listening for the past couple of years, and I don't know. I was really thankful you guys had Steve on a couple weeks ago, and like that was a great episode. So like I'm excited to be here and talk about, you know, this pretty momentous direct that's happened this week.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Sounds great. So let's dive right in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, high fives, whatever you like. We love hearing from you, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Also, another way to reach out and talk with other folks that listen to the show is by hanging out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out there. Should join them. But Bobby, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Ooh. I think the Metroid Prime reveal is pretty big for me. I mean,
yeah,
if you guys want to start with that. I mean, that's what, 8 years in the making, and we finally got our first peek at what, you know, Retro's been working on for almost a decade.
Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, certainly a major part of this Nintendo Switch Direct. Now, it's weird because next week we're going to get the Nintendo Switch 2 Direct. Mm-hmm. Odd, I think, that these two were so close together. It's like, hey, look at all this cool stuff coming to the console that we're about to replace. And the excitement will be for all that new stuff on the new console, which I expect will be exciting. And maybe there'll be a Metroid Prime 4 Beyond on the new console as well. We don't know. It says Metroid Prime 4 Beyond will be a 2025 game. The 2025 came up in the logo, but no specific date other than that. But a pretty lengthy bit of gameplay footage. We know that Samus is going to have a red costume. That looks kind of neat. We know that Samus is going to have psychic powers, which didn't look super impressive to me. It was like, hey, move this thing to that direction to unlock a door. I was like, well, you know, there's more exciting psychic powers, but maybe that's just the tip of the iceberg. What did you think of what they showed of Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, Bobby?
So just to start it off, I feel like this is just like a teaser till next week when we're going to get a more lengthy trailer. There's no way there's not going to be something else next week, because like this is going to be like one of the biggest titles for them going into the end of 2025 to 26. I liked it. I feel obviously, you know, they could have shown more. I mean, given that it's been almost 8 years of development, and I don't know, it's mixed to me. On one hand, it's more Metroid. On the other hand, it's like, well, this is what you've been working on for 8 years. So yeah. I do like the powers. I love the suit. Like, they've always had really good suits with like the retro games and all that. But I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I mean, there's no way it's going to be a bad game. I mean, you still have, you know, a good chunk of the original team working on it, retro, from what I understood. But yeah, I mean, I do like it. I think it was probably my highlight of this direct yesterday.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, I don't know. After Metroid Dread, I want more. Like, we had such a solid knock out of the park in that game, and I'm just like, well, if that's what they're going to give us in a 2D space, like, I feel it's prime time for a 3D game to returning. Just so give us a close. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, love it. I think it's interesting. This does seem to be positioned as the Twilight Princess or Breath of the Wild for this console cycle, where it's going to be coming out on both. But it's interesting that they did not. I mean, there's a lot of presumption here. Maybe it's not coming on both. We don't know yet. We will, you know, tune in next week on next week's episode. We'll be able to tell you more. Yeah. But it does seem to be the case that it will be the bridge game between these two console cycles. And if so, I think it's interesting that they didn't just reveal it with the Switch, you know, or not reveal it, but, you know, showcase it with the Switch 2 and say it's also going to be available on the first Switch. Instead, they have this entire Switch Direct, which has a lot more games than just Metroid Prime 4. We'll get into those in a moment. But, you know, certainly this is one of the biggest of them. And giving it its own time on this console, like saying, hey, look, here it is. Yeah. Look at all the gameplay footage of it on the first Switch. It's kind of having its own moment rather than being sort of an afterthought of, hey, the Switch 2 version, if there is one, is the, you know, is the showcase, and oh, also BT Dubs, it's also going to be on the old one. I think that's an interesting strategy if indeed that's what they're doing. That said, I kind of think what they showed wasn't particularly exciting.
And that's the case. That's the issue I feel.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I could be wrong, but like, I feel like this is what they did with, you know, the bridge between the Wii U and the Switch, right? Like, I mean, we'd end up getting Breath of the Wild on both. I mean, I don't feel like I was over excited by the Breath of the Wild reveal until I finally played it. And I just, that's it's been like a decade, right? But like, that's what I just feel like we're doing. We're just seeing the same thing happening again. Like we're leading to this new console generation with them. But yeah, I feel like they're just holding their cards close to their chest till next week. And we'll finally get a bigger reveal. I feel this was just like, hey, we're still working on it. Here's just something just to tide you over till next week. And more so to that, we counted the games, just a couple of guys on Console Creatures. And there was about 30 games in this direct, whereas the last one almost had 60. So like it was double. So I feel like next week we're going to see at least, you know, 30 to 40 games. So I feel like between the two directs, you're going to have a full showcase.
Christian Spicer, I know you're very excited for Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, and we'll sort of keep our discussion limited to that for the moment. It's odd that this direct is back-to-back weeks with the one everybody is much more excited for. But did you think what was shown of Beyond was impressive?
Yeah, I thought it looked great. I mean, Metroid Prime is one of my favorite franchises of all time. And so if you're just giving me more Metroid Prime, I'm very excited for that. I think the Metroid Prime remaster on Switch is the best version of that game. I used to say emulating it via Dolphin or something like that was the better way to play it. But the Switch version is 60 frames per second. They made the great, you know, additions to adding the in-house joystick controls to play it more like a traditional first-person shooter if you want to. And it's fluid. It's beautiful. You know, that game holds up. The art direction of Metroid Prime 1 and Metroid Prime Remastered on Switch, I think, was one of the best looking games the year in which it came out. And I think what they showed of Prime 4 Beyond also looks really great. I mean, yeah, it's been in development for close to a decade, but that's with several, you know, like burn it down, restart it moments. It was with a different developer for a time, then it went back in-house to Retro. And so I think if they're giving us more of that and having learned from 2 and 3, I think there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff here. I am very curious what the psychic powers are, because they did keep calling it psychic powers and not just telekinesis. And what they kept showing was just telekinesis.
And like kind of the most mundane telekinesis application, right?
It's like you could do that with a grapple beam in any other game, right? It's like a zip and a pull or a,
They seem to be making such a big deal about these psychic powers. And it's like, well, it seems to me there's going to be a lot more to it than that. But it didn't really feel like they were showing anything particularly thrilling to me.
Yeah, nothing that you haven't done in other games, you know, accessing a door panel from afar or pulling a thing to, I mean, you could use her beam to pull items from afar before. You just charge the beam and then the health and the ammo and the whatever comes your way.
Right.
But I have to believe there's more to this game. I'm very curious if it is on one planet. They only showed us one planet, or they only talked about one planet. I think keeping it on one planet can help build that atmosphere and the environment and the stuff that I think Metroid does really, really well. And then, I'm very curious, you know, as you and Bobby both mentioned, whether or not or how Nintendo is going to handle this cross-generation releases. Is it going to be a different SKU on each, or as folks kind of saw in the fine print afterward when they were talking about some of their games, the updated with Switch 2 version or Switch 2 version updates of, as they were talking about the virtual carts, which we'll get to in a bit as well. And so is there just one SKU of Prime 4? And Jeff, kind of as you've talked about for years, it will run better on Switch 2, but it also runs on Switch. Or are they going to have two different versions of this game the way they did Zelda in the past? The good news is, by the time folks are listening to this, because it's coming out a little later than normal because of an embargo, But when folks are listening to this, you kind of only have one more sleep before you find out. Two more sleeps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that in and of itself is just, you know, we talk about how Nintendo's, right? They're stubborn, they're quirky. And I think this is both of those things at play. Like, hey, we're going to show you all this stuff for a console that we're about to make redundant. You know, it's very strange to me that they would do this so close, like a month between them, 2 months, 3 months between them. That makes much more sense than a week. Like, we barely have time to digest this stuff, as you said, and then you got one more sleep, and then it's like, oh, it feels all outdated so quickly. Yeah. I don't understand it. But there's a lot of other games here other than Metroid Prime 4. And Metroid Prime 4 wasn't even positioned as kind of the last, you know, mic drop kind of moment. It was stuck in the middle there with everything else. And there's a lot of other games that were discussed. Yeah. Bobby, I'm curious if there are any other standouts for you from what was shown.
I mean, I did like the Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD, just like the brief, just like, hey, we're still working on it. I love that. The big one for me was Saga Frontier 2. I think it's a remake. I'm pretty sure it's a remake, but I haven't played that game in almost 2 decades. It's been at least 20 years, right? So it's like seeing that, you know, Square Enix is, you know, focusing on this property that was pretty much dead for the past 20 years. It's just like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Last year's Saga, Romancing Saga, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was 3. It was like a remake of 3, and it was just like the one where you do the generational stuff where you fight between every different generation. That was great. And then seeing this return is pretty cool. I think overall it was a good direct. I mean, there's a bit of everything for everybody. I'm more of an RPG, like I skew towards more of the RPG stuff like that. So like we did get a little bit of that for myself, and that was kind of what I feel stuck out. I could pick up. There's a couple things. The Raiju remastered, like I really liked that. I don't know if you guys played the Devil Summoner game from PS2.
No, never did.
They were really tough. I remember playing them as a teen, and I could never finish them. Like I would always rent them from Blockbuster, play them for a week, and then just hit a wall. But seeing that now, you know that Atlas is, you know, release them as remastered with quality of life updates, the UI, the difficulty levels, like that's cool to me.
Yeah,
I could pick a dozen games on this direct. I did like it. I know there are some people who weren't too fond of what was shown, but like, I mean, for myself, I mean, they're closing out the 8th year pretty strong for what they're doing. And like you said, I don't know if it feels redundant to me. I feel it just feels like they're like, well, we're still aware that this console sells a lot. So here's what we're doing for the next 365 days.
Yeah. We're not ignoring the install base of this console. I mean, I think there was even like a 2026 game in here. So it's like, you know, we're not abandoning this console. And I think maybe that's the message really to take away. I think you're right. Perhaps I'm being a little too harsh. I thought there were a number of pretty interesting games. I'm really excited about that Eternal Life of Goldman, but I doubt I'll be playing it on Switch. I'll probably be playing it on PC and Steam Deck and stuff, because I believe it's coming out for lots of things. But cool looking game. Christian, I suspect, like me, you perked up at Marvel Cosmic Invasion.
It looks incredible.
The folks behind Shredder's Revenge tribute games. Right, looks like some good old fashioned, newfangled but throwbacky brawler with characters we love.
Yes,
was it very just much me? Was it sorry? Was it just me? Did it sound when I saw that trailer? I'm like, this is just a remaster of an old game. But then it saw, you know, you see this new title. I'm like, this is a new game.
Yeah,
it's new. I thought it was something from like the SNES era, and I was just reading the press release, and they're saying it was something from like the era of Data East. Which is like, that's a big throwback, right? So I feel like, you know, .emu and tribute games, like they're pretty good. They rarely miss. So seeing them, you know, working with Marvel on something as cool as this, like I'm excited. But I'm just like, I'm not the target audience for this. I do like them. I'm not like fawning over it.
I'm very much the target audience.
Yeah, Chris is the target audience. I know that.
I mean, it's capturing X-Men 97 vibes on Disney+. It's also pulling I mean, yes, it has Wolverine and Venom and, you know, some of the big hitters. But
Nova,
it also has,
baby. The people are clamoring for Nova.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that it's not just X-Men. I like that they're doing other characters. But the art style very much does harken back to that Data East port of Captain America and the Avengers.
Yep.
And Shredder's Revenge was great. So if I'm able to play this, but now with the Marvel skin, and I'm curious what little tweaks they've made to that formula, because Shredder's Revenge brought some tweaks to that brawler formula in general. I think this is going to be a massive hit, and I look forward to playing it on my Steam Deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It does look pretty cool. Any other games, Christian, that leapt out to you?
I mean, I'll be the person to say it. I think this, except for the Switch 2 Direct being, again, like two sleeps from when you listen to this, I think this was a massively successful Nintendo Direct. It's just overshadowed by the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. You know, like there's this huge elephant in the room. So we got Metroid Prime 4 footage. We got new information and footage for Pokemon Legend ZA. We got a new Rhythm Heaven game,
which looks really fun.
And all of the other stuff. Yeah. So we got three huge Nintendo IP games updates coming to the Switch. Like any other Nintendo Direct, I think people would be falling over themselves saying how this was such a great Nintendo Direct. It harkens back. It looks at their legacy. It has new games. It remembers that it is this great home for RPGs, which I think people have kind of forgotten the Nintendo legacy of being the home of all these Square Enix games and all these great RPGs. Also brawlers of old, so many memories I think for folks on the SNES are built on those brawler memories, bringing the arcade home, and then these other three big franchises. And then on top of that, they're doing a cool thing with how you can share digital games and the virtual game cards. Like, I'm kind of shocked that Nintendo is the one who seems to be doing this first to some extent, like Movies Anywhere. There's been some other services that deal with movies or music that kind of deal with this stuff, but I think Movies Anywhere canceled it because they said people weren't using it enough, but it had some weird quirks to it. And yes, currently on the Switch you can set up you can have like a primary and a non-primary, and then the non-primary can play any of the games on the account if the
it's a pain.
It's like a little bit of jumping through some hoops, and this has some hoop jumping also, but I think it seems like they're really what was it?
It's not easy
to jump. It's not easy. But maybe if you try doing it to the beat. I think it really tries to smooth that stuff out and recognize that Switches are family consoles. You might have more than one, and the ability to share any game with, and that's what I'm very curious about, but like with just another Switch, kind of like you're just loaning it to it, or in your family to have that 2-week limitation and let them play it. I love that. Love it. I am very curious if there are going to be limitations on it after it comes out, and like Square is like, not our games, or Activision, or Xbox is like, not our games. But if it is just carte blanche, every game, like you own an actual physical cart and you can lend it to people like that, awesome. More of that. More of that, please.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Perhaps this is a cynical take, but I suspect that it has more to do with exerting control over your digital content than anything else. Like, it's like, hey, we got clear rules about how to do this. And yes, maybe they're a little more lenient than they have been, but I don't know.
Yeah, the rules before were you can't. So I'll take you can a little bit.
You could-ish. Yes, I think this is clearer. I like the metaphor of the cart. But like, I don't know, all of it is just, it feels like a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. You know, it's like, well, it's not, we're not actually getting any freedom. It's just this sort of veil of freedom.
But look, if somebody has me trapped in a closet and then Bobby, they let me look out the bottom sliver of the door, that's an upgrade, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Think of it this way. So we know Nintendo is very litigious. They've been going after all these emulators the past year. And now I think I know why they've been doing it. And yesterday they revealed it. It was this way to share games legally. Mm. So, and they've been pretty good with, you know, offering incentives to these people who are developing them. And I feel like that's something we have to consider too, right? It was just like, how do we address, you know, 100 million units of the Switch, and then like maybe 20% are being pirated. So this is their solution to it. And I'm super, like you said, I'm surprised Nintendo's the one who figured it out first. But I mean, there's another thing where I'm cautiously optimistic about it, because the way they present it is you can eject your digital console for your game card and then share it with somebody. So they're trying to put it in the same way as just like you pop the card in and out and you give it to your friend or your wife or your partner. That's cool. I do like it. I'm on board with it. It's just like, yeah, what barriers are we going to have to go through to just make it work? Like there's a 2-week return period. Like it's like signing out a book. What happens if you know, you go over that 2-week period? Do you lose the cartridges, disappear? Like there's all these things that we don't know yet. So like, I know that Nintendo promised we'll get an update at the end of April. But like until then, it's there's just so much speculation. Like, how's it going to work? And like, how are we bound to these consoles?
I'm most curious about they showed this, like, well, you have to have a connection,
right?
But only the first time. It's like, well, how does that work? That's one of the pain points as it currently works, which is every time you load a game on the non-primary Switch, it has to check in with home and be connected to the internet. So if you want to play a game and you're on an airplane or you're traveling in some way and on this portable console, you are SOL if you can't attach to the internet for a moment just to have it validate your copy.
If you're not the primary console.
If you're not the primary console, right.
you're good to go. And I think that 14-day thing is only for the family group. That's the other thing. They showed two different ways to do this. Yeah. There's like the family share and then the direct, you know, with one other Switch that you can designate as your sharesy Switch.
But it now incentivizes if you can grab, like, I think it's up to 8 people. So if you grab 7 other people and you're like, hey, let's just put our money together, we'll get a family plan, we all benefit from it. So it's like your library becomes mine, and then we all kind of just become this group and we all share our games together. And I think that's a good way to just, you know, play with your friends. Like you can be like, hey, like Jeff and Christian, you're like, hey, I got the latest Metroid Prime, and I know you don't want to play it yet, but I'll give it to you for 2 weeks.
Right. But I mean, right now how it works is, yes, it's a bummer that I have to have an internet connection. If I pick up my non-primary Switch, I have a lot of experience with this because we do have 2 Switches in my house.
I hate it. It's
annoying.
It's
super annoying
system, yeah.
But you know what it doesn't require? It doesn't require me picking up the primary Switch and ejecting anything.
Yeah.
That's my worry, is that you need, in order for me to play on the, you know, I buy a digital game on one Switch, and to play it on another, I have to get on that first Switch and eject it first. Is that how it's going to work? I don't know for sure, but certainly that's the metaphor that we're talking about. That's the concept, right? If I had a physical cartridge, I would have to remove it first from the first one to put it in the second one. So I don't have to do that right now. And
for a brief second, I saw when I was watching that yesterday, I was like, so are they saying I can actually put like an SD card in there and copy it and then give it to someone? That's what I thought for a second. That's what it was presented as.
No, but I think it's all virtual.
And then they said local wireless. So as long as you have the consoles next to each other, they'll be able to see each other, and you just like pass it to your friend. So it's just like it's just like transferring data locally, like between 2 consoles.
Right.
That's what I think they're doing.
To,
right.
You know, I don't have to access the first console at all in the current situation.
Exactly.
Which is
there should be a way to be able to do it from like I really hope that they meet today's like criteria for tech, and like let me sign into my Nintendo account on the web, and let me just say like, hey, I'm gonna send Jeff this copy of this game. I don't need to use my console. I just, you know, have to send this game to him from this website, and then he just gets an email and it loads onto his console directly or something like that. There should be
I want to be able to safeguards. pluck it from my secondary Switch in some way, you know. We'll see how it works. We'll see.
And I don't think they said they're getting rid of the current version. I could see that they do.
No, there's no
but
way.
I don't, you know, they didn't say that. And I should also say, I'm sorry I waited this long to say it, dear listener, you've already sent the email. But yeah, Steam family sharing is great and has been around for in beta for years and kind of rolled out already. So Nintendo is certainly not the first, and they're certainly doing a Nintendo twist on it. But hopefully more people do things like this, because the library's been doing it forever, right? Like a digital audiobook or ebook. I love it.
The other thing that they debuted in this Direct was something they're calling Nintendo Today, which has already been the source of some news, albeit not too exciting. But the Legend of Zelda movie has a release date, 2027 March, which is weird to me. This felt like a summer tentpole movie, but March is not usually the place you put the gigantic blockbusters in the movie industry. And video game industry, yes, March is huge, as we all know. But March, I think 27th, 2020, or maybe I was seeing 27. Anyway, March of 2027. But that's the way that they reveal this information, is this new app that you'll be able to get on mobile that is a daily calendar for Nintendo stuff. I didn't think there was enough Nintendo stuff for every day checking in, but maybe that's their new paradigm. Is they're going to be
Tuesday is just, what do you want from us? No news today.
Still nothing. Yeah. So interesting stuff from this Nintendo Direct. I was pretty excited to see the Patapons. We knew about those. That Disney Villains Christ Cafe is charming. Not a game that I'll probably be playing a lot of, but I like it. Looks charming. Mm-hmm. A number of really, I mean, like I like seeing Gradius, a number of really,
which
interesting
got a new one.
Switch.
That was the weirdest thing about the Gradius Origins collection. It's like a collection of all these old games and like, and also Salamander 3, which it's like, yo, what? There's a new one.
Yeah. So, this does feel a bit to me like, having the cake before presents. It's like, I like cake. But, it's my birthday. I'm 6. I want those presents. Let's open the presents. No. We got to sit down. Everybody's got to eat their cake. Do the cake before the presents. I like the cake, but my eye's on the prize, baby. We'll tune in next week for said prize. All right. We got more news to get to, but we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more DLC right after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Opera GX. Web browsers. We don't talk about them enough. Most web browsers are built for everybody, which means they're tailored for nobody. They're generic. All one size fits all. They're not made for us. And by us, I mean gamers. Guess what? That's what Opera GX is about. With the latest Opera GX facelift, your browser can be more customizable than ever. Deeper personalization, design updates, an expanded universe of mods and modding options that put even more pixels under your control. This is browsing crafted to match your style and setup down to the smallest detail, making it completely yours. Christian, the Opera GX gaming features are pretty darn cool.
Yeah, and you don't need to leave behind the stuff that you've had at your other browser that you want to bring over with you, right? So you want these gaming features. You want to use the stuff that Opera GX has. So you can import all of your history, browsing history, bookmarks, cookies, if you want to bring that stuff over. And it's simple, right? You just go into the browser settings, synchronization, import bookmarks and setting, import, and that's about it. You're done. And so if there is stuff like, oh, I've built this legacy of tabs, perhaps, on my super ultra wide monitor.
I think you bring up an excellent point. I never close anything. But that doesn't mean it's going to stop me from playing a game on my PC, right? But with Opera GX, you can keep your system running at peak performance while gaming, even with your browser open, because GX Control, one of the new features, lets you limit how much CPU and RAM Opera GX can use. So you can avoid lag and frames per second drops while keeping your favorite tabs and music running in the background. It's pretty awesome. Plus, the GX Corner in Opera GX is like your own personal loadout screen But for the gaming world, you can discover free games, the hottest deals, upcoming releases, all in one place. You stay geared up with news, updates, and free games. They have deals, they have release and gaming news, all in one accessible place. And you can easily switch between platforms and see the upcoming games in the release calendar. It's a browser built for gamers. Check it out by using our URL. Go to operagx.gg/DLC. We want to thank Opera GX for sponsoring the show. Check them out at OperaGX, OPERAGX.gg/DLC. Again, that's OperaGX.gg/DLC. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week, hot breaking news. It's not that hot or breaking news anymore because it happened, you know, kind of close to when we recorded our last show and between when this one's going to come out. But Ubisoft has been acquired. No, let me see. How do I? Parts of there are a few games that Ubisoft really thinks are great. And Tencent also really thought a few of these franchises were great. And then there's like Rabbids, which Ubisoft is like, I guess no one wants this. But a few games, like all the Tom Clancy games? No. Just like one of them. The other Tom Clancy games? Splinter Cell is dead to us. We killed Sam Fisher years ago. He snapped his own neck with night vision goggles. But there are a couple games.
What about Just Dance?
Just Dance by yourself. But a few games. Oh, okay. A few right. Franchises we really
Watch
like.
Watch Dogs?
That's a far cry from one of the franchises we care about. But let me just say, so Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, and Rainbow Six have been franchises, have been spun off, or will be, it's happening, you know, the legal nitty gritty is happening, are splitting off into a separate entity that received $1.3 billion or more, depending on exchange rates when this actually gets finalized, investment from Tencent, the Chinese company that does everything and everywhere and has invested in all the video games. And so it's a subsidiary of Ubisoft, new venture, co-owned, I think it's like about 25 or 30% interest of by Tencent. And not only is it those franchises, those select franchises, but also every Ubisoft team working on those franchises. And to me, that maybe seems like the bigger part of this, because Ubisoft famously, you know, pulls from here, pulls from there, pulls from here. It's like Bobby Flay in the kitchen, you know, like grabs whatever he wants from whoever he wants, even if it's a challenge. He'll take your shrimp and he's going to cook with it.
Yeah. It's a real team effort.
It's a real team effort. And now those teams are sequestered in this subsidiary. Again, there's plenty to work on in these franchises. But this, I mean, the rumors of Ubisoft's acquisition, demise, whatever, have been rampant for years. And this feels like a very interesting half step toward it. And Bobby, I'm curious, you know, if I'm overreacting.
I think it's a life preserver away from it.
You think?
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, they're on the ropes right now, Ubisoft. Like, we're hearing about their demise. I think at this point, weekly, I feel like every we're hearing about, you know, Ubisoft needs to do this. They need to do this to stay afloat.
There's an app for it. You can check daily.
There's an app for it. It's on Nintendo today. You actually could probably find it next week. But
it's Ubisoft today with a question mark.
Exactly. It's under Ubisoft Connect. Disconnect. I feel like their Ubisoft's leadership is basically hanging on for dear life at this point, and they refuse to give up control. So I feel like the compromise is, you know, letting Tencent in the back door and just being like, hey, you know, you give us all this money and you can have a little bit of say on our biggest franchises. As someone who, you know, who does like Ubisoft games, I do know some people who do work at the studios. I don't agree with this. I don't agree with this at all. I feel like it's just like, if you're going to give up your soul, give it up to somebody who can, you know, maybe make it hurt a little bit less. So, like, I feel like if, you know, Ubisoft let Sony in a little bit, you know, gave a little bit of buy-in, a little bit of Microsoft, not Tencent. Tencent's just notorious for their layoffs and similar to, like, NetEase. I just don't feel like this is a good partnership. And more so to that, Assassin's Creed selling so well this month, and I feel like it was just too soon. Like they took this thing to stay afloat. I feel like it is a bribe to just get Tencent in. And it doesn't sit right with me. I don't feel like this is a good mix for Ubisoft. It's such an iconic development / publisher, all this stuff. And it's just like, no, so you guys are the guys who made Prince of Persia. You've made Assassin's Creed, the Rabbids games, like you've done even Trials, like all these games are good. And now you're just giving up your soul to Tencent. And I don't know. I'm mixed. I want to know more about it. I feel like we're going to have to see more before anything can be really said about it. But yeah,
I can understand that perspective. It's a 25% stake in this new subsidiary, which it's such an odd deal here, right? You're splitting off these three franchises into their own thing. I do think it is a life preserver. I do think it is an influx of funding, which is apparently what Ubisoft desperately needs. And giving up 25% stake, it's I think this is something that companies tend to do, right? It's, you know, you want to buy a bunch of our stock so that we can stay afloat, and then you have a say in what we do. You don't have majority say. Now, it doesn't work like that. That's a metaphor I'm trying to draw that's probably flawed. But it doesn't seem to me to be as
in the best interest of the company.
Well, it's not as sea changing as, you know, selling the company off. This is like, hey, we're gonna silo this part of the business and then sell 25% of that silo so that we can stay independent and stay. I mean, we're really a family business for all intents and purposes, right? The Guillemot family still runs Ubisoft, so it seems to me like this is a real Hail Mary for them to be like, this is to avoid being purchased on the whole, right? We're just going to, we can sell a little bit of our soul instead of the entire soul. So hopefully it means more great Ubisoft games in the future. And yeah, there's certainly a potential downside here, but I think for a company that seemed to be cash strapped, seemed to be on the open market and floundering, this might just be a, like I said, life preserver.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Maybe we get some sweet new Ubisoft franchises like Creed of Assassins, Cries from Afar.
Love it. And
Six Rainbows that are owned wholly by...
That are the just pure mobile games.
But this is... Sorry, last thing. My favorite part of this kind of release that came out is this quote that says what it's going to do. If you've ever pitched or heard about pitching a movie or TV show or anything really, you know that the best way to pitch something is to say it's for everybody and it does everything. That always works really well. And so Ubisoft says this unit will drive further increases in quality of narrative solo experiences, expand multiplayer offerings with increased frequency of content releases, introduce free-to-play touch points, and integrate more social features. Yeah, you so like solo. We're doing all of them. We you like that. This? We got it.
We got to money game now. Studio, yeah. We got money. Yeah. We can make more of the everything because we got money. That's what that is. Also, I do need to say, since we're talking about Ubisoft, several people pointed out that our guest last week repeatedly attributed Assassin's Creed Shadows to Ubisoft Montreal, when it is in fact Ubisoft Quebec that made Shadows. So I wanted to correct that. I didn't correct it in real time, but
I didn't know the difference. I mean, I didn't know that.
that was yeah.
Every team worked on all the games in my head. So yeah,
I'm sure there's lots of crossover there. But we'll see. The interesting thing to me here is like, are these your favorite children? You know, is it like, well, we got to hold on to Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, and Rainbow Six. Like, all that other stuff, who knows? But I don't know.
These are like the studios that are listed, like Montreal, Quebec, Sherbrooke. These are the, and Barcelona, Sofia, and Sigonair, whatever it is, how do you pronounce them? Those are the ones that have been critically received well with their last five or six games they put out. So yeah, I mean, I feel it is, they pick their favorite kids.
Yeah,
and there's no way to, you have to, right? If you're giving up that much control, okay. Well, if we're gonna give you this much, here's our our best kids were putting up for adoption.
Yeah. Well, it feels like Tencent is like, well, these are the ones that have the dollar signs after them.
Yeah.
Anyway, we shall keep tabs on that development, but it is interesting. My story of the week is another sort of upstart publisher / developer that has finally kind of come out and revealed, well, not finally, we know some new things about Dreamhaven. Dreamhaven is the studio that Mike Morhaime from Blizzard fame, one of the founders of Blizzard, left Blizzard, used all his own personal cash to create what he called a incubator for these smaller studios to sort of do passion projects. I'm not really seeing what I would call passion projects here. Who am I to judge other people's passions? But they do seem to be fitting into very specific pegs of already established things. It's not like they're going outside the box here, but, you know, perhaps. I mean, one of them is. Anyway, Moonshot Games, which is one of the incubated developers that is home to a lot of really storied Blizzard developers or ex-Blizzard developers, including Dustin Browder, Jason Chase, and Ben Thompson. These are folks that have been instrumental in some of the biggest Blizzard franchises, StarCraft, Warcraft, the massive designers who split off from Blizzard, now doing their own thing. Moonshot announced their first game, which is called Wildgate. Wildgate is a multiplayer shootery kind of thing, but man, it really gave me vibes of my friend texted this to me, who's a massive Blizzard fan, and I was like, oh, I was wondering how long it would take for somebody to do sci-fi Sea of Thieves in space, which is what this looks like. And I'm surprised nobody has done it before, unless I'm not aware of something that has already done it. But it certainly does look like a multiplayer, it's not a hero shooter per se, but in the mold of a lot of these games that have been coming out, with the added layer of ship-to-ship combat, ship-to-ship maintenance, stuff that you do in Sea of Thieves, for example. I think the game looks interesting. Bobby, did you get a chance to take a look at Wildgate?
So I did. I didn't watch the full trailer. I kind of just skipped through it because I was kind of sold by the description just because of some of those, like you said, Sea of Thieves in space. I'm like, okay, cool. Let me see the trailers. And I kind of skipped through it. I do like it. I mean, I was pretty heavy on Sea of Thieves on Xbox and then kind of into the PlayStation. So I mean, from the looks of it, I'm down to play it. I feel like I'm surprised no one's thought of this yet. And I would probably play this more over than Sea of Thieves just because I love a good sci-fi game. I don't think it needs to be revolutionary. It doesn't need to rock the boat too much. But I mean, I feel like there is a place for this game. And it's held by, like you said, some of the biggest names that I know from Blizzard. So it's like, it's cool. I feel like, yeah, if it's free to play, I feel like it might just be like the next coming of bread. If that's the thing. Cause like, who doesn't want to play that?
Yeah, I'm curious. They haven't mentioned the business model, if it is going to be
we don't know. But
I got to say, Christian, I am a little disappointed when I heard about Dreamhaven and Morhaime's initiative here and his feeling like, hey, I'm going to use my own money and I'm going to take some of these really great, talented individuals and fund what they want to do instead of it sort of being this top down. We decide what you work on. It's like, what do you want to make? Let's build stuff from the heart. This live stream, which was sort of co-live streamed by the Game Awards, showed updates on all of the Dreamhaven Studio stuff that has been announced so far. There's that one really cool game. Oh, what is it called? Where, you know, it's sort of you're playing D&D and everybody's playing on their phone. It's made for couch co-op. You're playing on your phone, but everybody's looking at the television, but you control it with your phone. That feels novel and interesting and feels like somebody's passion project. But man, all this other stuff felt very generic to me. And as much as Wildgate looks like it could potentially be fun, it doesn't have that spark of originality that I was expecting from an incubator like this with these big names. I mean, in the trailer, they're talking about, oh, you're going for, you have to capture the artifact. I'm like, oh, is there a more generic name you could come up with for your MacGuffin? I'm curious what you think of Wildgate, Moonshot, and Dreamhaven as a whole.
Yeah, I am curious, as Bobby mentioned, I'm curious the monetization of Wildgate. I'm also curious how they constrain it, because I think what Starfield showed for me personally versus something like Avowed is that space is infinite and vast and often boring. And Sea of Thieves, I think, is interesting because you are stuck in oceans can be big, but it's a limited play space, right? And I feel like Wildgate also must have a limited play space, because you can't just be like, oh, here's a skirmish. Never mind. We are jumping 4 million light year away. Now we are safe in this other area. You know, I think No Man's Sky is maybe the best example of showing space not being boring, being infinite, but not boring. But that also took an infinite number of years for
Huge update this week, by the way. They added paleontology to the game, which is
there's another
neat.
Update. Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. I can't even keep up, because I feel like there's one what, 2 months ago? And yeah. It's pretty substantial.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible what game that team puts out.
Awesome now. And that's why I'm curious what this is going to be like. Because, you know, famously, perhaps, or infamously, I was not high on Sea of Thieves when it first launched. There's an episode of this show that you can probably find where I kind of poo-poo all over it. And it just did not click for me. I've since revisited it several times. I did the Pirates of the Caribbean update. I really loved that. But Sea of Thieves was a success, I think, built on the back of Game Pass and Microsoft really devoting time, money, and resources to it, and patience for it to find its community and become the thing that it can. I am very curious if Dreamhaven has that runway for something like Wildgate and the other games they're working on. That's the part that I think I'm most concerned about, is whether or not these games will be given enough of a chance to find their groove before they need to pivot to something else to make their money back.
It'll be interesting to see. I just wish this stuff was a little bit more daring, a little bit more there's not 400 other things like that. I mean, yes, it has some interesting unique qualities to it, based on the trailer for Wildgate. I had higher hopes from this endeavor as a whole, and I'm still hopeful, but I really, when I heard about Dreamhaven, I was like, yes, Morhaime is getting back to that mentality of when they founded Blizzard and they were just doing it for the love. And it's like, it wasn't just trying to plug into to a genre that was already working. And they were really just trying to build stuff that they cared about. And I don't get that vibe. I don't get that vibe from what they're actually making.
It looks like a perfect Game Pass game.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Maybe it'll be on Game Pass. We don't know.
That's the thing. Like I fully expect it to be on Game Pass by launch. Like, there's no way it's not going to be. It literally is a sister game to Sea of Thieves.
Mm. Well, we'll see. It is a 2025 release, as they say, coming to PC and consoles this year. So I'm sure we'll see more as it ramps up toward release. But I also think,
Jeff, Blizzard did some of their best work working with established genres, not pioneering them.
That's absolutely the case. That's absolutely the case. Maybe I'll eat my words when this game is awesome. And hopefully it is. I'm rooting for awesome. Always rooting for awesome. All right, we got some awesome to get to on our personal playlists. But first, let's take another quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back after this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, we've been playing lots of stuff, so let's dive in to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Bobby, I know you play lots of stuff for console creatures. What is on your playlist this week?
So my big one is I'm trying to do the platinum run on Assassin's Creed Shadows. That's my number one goal right now. I need to finish it. I do love this game. I feel like it's and I'm not going to be cliche and say it's a return to form. It's a good Assassin's Creed game. I just want to, you know, 100% it and move on, because I feel like it's been a while since I've had a good open world experience. And surprisingly, this is the game that's kind of reinvigorated my love for open world games.
It's excellent. I mean, I'm playing a ton of it too. Christian's playing a ton of it too. I think I did not expect of the big March, you know, glut of huge releases to be coming out of it thinking Assassin's Creed Shadows is, for me, the top of the heap. I mean, I think Avowed is awesome. I know a lot of people are loving Monster Hunter, but man, Assassin's Creed Shadows, I was cautiously optimistic, but it has exceeded all of my wildest hopes.
I was lucky enough to preview it, I think back in January. And in that moment, like when I was playing it, I was like, this is really good. And I didn't get that feeling when I was previewing Valhalla, and even more so as I was playing it later on. I was like, no, it's good, but it's too much. Yeah. And then Shadows comes along and like surprises basically everybody. Like, we knew, you know, there was a make or break game, and that's something we already discussed, but like, I'm glad that Ubisoft gave these developers the extra 6-7 months. It really made a difference. I love it. Everything's so cool about it. I love the characters. Like, the world is really fun to explore. It has a couple of issues that I've been discussing on Creature Cast, but yeah, overall, that's my big one. I have a couple other things.
Wait, what are the issues that you have?
So I've posted them on socials. You can actually find them. But like, I have a lot of issues like where like textures aren't loading. So like in certain instances, like now we can, you know, hide in those boxes in indoors, you know, those like big like rectangle boxes, like the texture doesn't work. Or I was actually on my horse and I found two soldiers just textureless, and they look like something out of like a game from the 16-bit era. It was just really weird. I had an eagle.
This is on PS5?
PS5 Pro. Yeah. Yep. And like, I had an eagle that was basically mid-flight, just frozen on the ground with its wings spread open. And whatever I did, like, it was just, it would not like reset. It was weird. It's small things like that, but at this point, it's Yubi jank. I expect it, and I actually do like it because it's endearing to me. It's fun. You come across, you're like, this is Ubisoft. This is a Ubisoft game. You see it, you're like, oh, it's fine.
I do miss the eagle. I miss the eagle functionality of pushing.
Wasn't a fan of it, to be honest with you.
Really?
It worked in Origins. I love what they did in Origins, but then it became a gimmick. Like, it was just basically the Ghost Recon drone brought back for every game. And like, and that's where I feel like that whole thing of Ubisoft just recycles everything came into play, right? But I miss the eagle vision. The Assassin's Creed era, like the Ezio games, where you have this power. You're a character who has these powers. Like, why aren't we using them? The eagle's cool for the drone, like the drone abilities to be able to mark targets and stuff. But that's where the verticality of these games comes into play for me. It's like, we used to be able to climb up, you know, this tall point on a building, and we could scout. And that's what we could. And that's where I feel like that's where I'm glad this is back. There's no more eagle to do that, right? This thing is just, now it climbs up. She can pinpoint where she wants to go and mark the targets there. And that makes more sense to me, right? But like, yeah, I mean, it's just an opinion, right? It's just an opinion. But like, I mean, this is the first game in almost 7-8 years now where I feel it's like we're finally getting back on track of where Black Flag and, you know, Syndicate and Unity left off. Those were probably my favorite three games. And it's just like, as much as I appreciate the RPG style games, it's just like, I still miss like the linear 15-hour game where it's just like, you just do this, you have your black box missions, and then you're done.
Yes. Shadows, I mean, it's just been, it's been a blast. And
that's the thing though.
Very few complaints. Having a blast. Christian, do you have any other things you want to throw in on for Shadows this week?
The only thing I haven't mentioned yet on this show about Shadows is how wonderfully pick up and play it is. Like, yes, there's the larger story and the larger missions, and there are missions that come back to relate to other missions. And there's the thing where it's like, oh, I got to go do this thing. All I got to do is bring this guy a rock. And then you bring the guy the rock and he's like, yes, but before I accept this rock, go kill 30 of my enemies. And you're like, okay, cool. But each incremental thing is very easy just to pick up and play. And I think that's a really smart design. Yes, you can't save in the middle of intense combat or something like that. But pretty much otherwise, it's easy to find to go in and be able to save whenever you want. Yep. It's got a generous auto-save checkpointing system. And for a game that I think for the three of us is going to be as many hours as it is, having the ability to just sit down and do something fun and meaningful and exciting and even just 30 minutes of gameplay is awesome for these big open world games. I love that part of it.
I also, you know, this is not new to Shadows, but I think Shadows does it particularly well. The Assassin's Creed sort of objectives menu system, I really love it. And especially coming off of spending so much time with Avowed just recently, which is the much more traditional, here's a list. Here's just a static list of your quests, which is perfectly fine and functional. And I don't necessarily have any qualms with that, right? It's clear, it's effective, it's what you need. But having this much more dynamic system that sort of shows you the interrelationship of how the quests relate to the world at large and all the characters that are and the factions of the world. I thought that I really enjoy that. I really enjoy not feeling like, oh, it's just a checklist that I need to move through. It's more like, wow, this is a dynamic flowchart of interrelationships in this evolving world. I really enjoy that.
It's almost as if Ubisoft learned from their mistakes, right? I mean, and I don't know if you guys played Assassin's Creed Unity, but one of the biggest misfortunes that game had was the menu, or not the menu, the map, which was literally littered with thousands of things to pick up or things or people to fight. And it was just like, no. So they've kind of pulled back from that. And I do like appreciate that it's more just like, here's like it's like a memory palace kind of thing where everything's kind of laid out for you and you kind of pick and choose where you want to go. And I love it. It's more like it's basically a slimmed down, lean version of the past three games, which is exactly what I feel we needed.
Yeah, it reminded me of Deathloop did something similar.
And
you know, there's games that have been experimenting with this, and I think it's much more palatable to me than just like a static list. Shadow's so good.
So good.
So good. All right. You're also playing, Bobby, one of the hardest games, I hear, to come out in a while. First Berserker Kazan?
Yes. And I actually want to preface this by saying my review is still delayed because this game is that challenging. I got my code last week. I've been struggling to play this game. It's hard, but it's fun. It's rewarding. It's a lot harder than any of the FromSoft games I've ever played, and I've played every single one. I've platinum most of them. This game here is absolutely a challenge in my patience, and that's putting it lightly. I this is going to show you how bad I am. I struggled with the first boss for 3 days just because. Wow. And that's the thing. And it was part of the demo. I finished it in the demo. And then I switched over to my PlayStation to play, and it's just been a learning curve. It's like I have to have the patience to memorize the enemy's pattern, learning that it's a typical thing where you have to just have the patience to know what's happening, what's about to come, and then how to counter whatever is about to be thrown at you. And it's a very big testament to having patience for games. And it reminds me of how difficult games used to be when I was a kid. I mean, it reminds me, because coming from the NES era to now, it's like, whoa, games got really easy up until a point. And now it's like remembering that, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES would have broken me as like right now if I played it. It would probably break my brain.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first Berserker Kazan it's a really cool game. It's from Nexon and Meeple. It's really cool. I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and it's a game where it really rewards you. So like once you learn that pattern of the enemy, and you know you've died 6 or 7 times, it does this really cool thing where every time you die, you're rewarded with some like the game's version of soul. So you get rewarded based on how much damage you've done. So if you got half of the boss's health bar down, you get a pretty good chunk of souls to redisperse into level up. So you basically level up as you die because you it gives that's you cool. It's something I've never seen before, but that's what saves me. If I had to continue to play this game and just continually die without being able to level up and, you know, improve my stamina, my endurance, it's these small things, right? So you have to remember how to fight a boss and then, you know, don't use your stamina during this attack, or this attack's he's about to throw a rock at you and you have to dodge a certain way. So it's like, it's a very, very good way to learn that my muscle memory is not as good as it was 10 years ago. So I'm improving that. That's my biggest, I've been able to improve my muscle memory just on this game. And more so to the point, I just finished another run of Elden Ring last week, which, you know, probably one of my favorite games of all time. No issues with that game. Coming back to this, it's like what's wrong? I thought something was wrong with me. Like, there's something wrong with how I'm playing games.
Well, it sounds like it. I've heard a lot of people talk about this and say that, you know, the game is fair. It doesn't, it's very, very difficult, but it's not, you know, it's not throw your controller across the room. But it sounds to me like you've gotten a little more frustrated with it.
100%. And that's the thing. It's why I'm frustrated, just because, like, to the point, Elden Ring's first boss was Margit. I don't know if you guys are big FromSoft boss. He's like the first boss you come across. He was like the one boss that would make or break any player in this game. Like, if you can beat him, like, you're fine. Playing to this game here, it's like, if you can't beat the first boss, you're like, don't even bother. Like, you really have to have the patience and want to play this game, because, like, in a year where there's so many games, it's like, you can be playing something else that's not going to frustrate you. But this one here, it's just reinvigorated just how much I love that challenge of, like, being rewarded for memorizing their attack patterns, learning how to parry at the specific time, how to block, how to dodge, how to use, you know, element enhancing buffs to get through, like, a fire enemy or like a snow enemy. And it's just like, it's a checklist of things I'm doing, but it's all muscle. It's all muscle memory. It's just like, okay, I got to do this at this time. I got to do this at this time. If I don't do this at this specific time, like, this boss will one-shot me and I'll go flying down, like, you know, the mountain or whatever it is. So it's easily one of my most recommended games this year. It is really exciting that this is, like, I think the first game from Meeple, that studio that made it. But, like, it's one of the best non-FromSoft games I played. It's up there with Lies of P. And, yeah, I mean, it's a solid game. Like, I really don't feel like there's anything I could say that's really bad about it. It's just like it's wholesome for my soul. It's wholesome.
With all and I'm not of the saying dismemberment that
as a joke. Yeah, it's wholesome because it's just like, you got to remember
it's humbling, right?
It's humbling.
Exactly.
Let's put it that way. It's humbling. Yeah.
I love that the folks that are into these masochistic experiences, everybody talks about, like, this is brutal. I can't handle it, but I have no complaints, no complaints.
And that's the thing. Like,
I love that.
On the flip side, like, I actually was reviewing two Soulsborns back to back. So I did AI Limit. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but it's one of those Chinese project games that were, I guess, funded by Sony. It's a lot easier. So it's basically the counter crux to this game. So, like, I was able to clear that game one-shotting bosses. I could one try defeat everybody. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to load up the first Berserker. And then I was humbled, like you said, right away.
Well, that's go ahead.
It's definitely a weird juxtaposition where I'm playing one Souls like that's really easy. And then the other one I'm playing that's just like, you're not getting past this boss. You're going to go to bed frustrated.
Well, If you're into going to bed frustrated, ladies and gentlemen, the first Berserker Kazan is for you.
Yeah.
Christian Spicer, you got a chance, which is why this episode is a little late. We're acknowledging the embargo. You got a chance to get some hands-on with a really anticipated game, Doom the Dark Ages.
Yeah, buddy. So I got to play it here in Los Angeles, and listening to this now, I also sent out a newsletter that included some of, you can find it at christianspicer.substack.com, that included some B-roll of me actually playing. I was like, how can I incorporate that into the VOD of this show, and just the logistics of having my capture up in the way I do this video. It's why it's not here, but I included some of my capture on my newsletter that also went out at embargo. Doom the Dark Ages, you know, it's pitched as stand and fight, right? That's the catchphrase for this trilogy, this third entry in this new modern Doom trilogy.
In contrast to the previous game, which was like flinging you around and much more agile, right?
Correct. And it does feel weird to say, oh, this new modern Doom trilogy, but also this modern Doom trilogy started in 2016, you know, almost 10 years that we've been in this ethos of Doom in this story. I really, really loved what I played. I think we played about 4 hours of the game, and it was broken up into various sections. So we played what we were told was the opening level of the game. We were playing on PC, and I was told we were playing on RTX, NVIDIA RTX 4080 cards. I was playing with a controller. So we played the opening level of the game, which I love when game demos do this, because I think it allows you to get familiar with the game versus a game I very much loved, but I talked about in its preview, Alan Wake 2. It was like, you're 6 hours in. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening 6 hours in. I don't know how to do anything. With Doom the Dark Ages, we started at the beginning. And then from there, we got to see a little bit of, we got to play, I should say, segments when you're riding on the dragon, and also segments when you're Mecha Doom guy, when in the large stompy stomp suit. And then also some of the sandbox environment, which is a new part of this version of this current trilogy of Doom, where you are in an area where it is kind of it's not an open world, but an open area in which you're able to explore and also have different encounters with the enemies, because you need to keep your head on a swivel a little bit more than the traditional Doom levels. Even in 2016 and Eternal, when it would open up into those larger kill boxes, kill areas, you kind of had your areas that you were playing in, right? Where you were strafing, where you were grappling, what you were zipping up to. And what the Dark Ages does in these larger sandbox areas, I think really dynamically changes the combat experience while still utilizing all of the skills you've learned along the way. So backing up to the beginning of the game, where you are Doom guy on foot, the stand and fight, you've got the shield, you got your weapons. It feels so good, gentlemen. So good. They absolutely nail the feeling of this heavier weighted Doom guy, where yes, you can jump, but you're not double jumping. You're not zipping and pulling yourself around. It very much is this boots on the ground approach to combat, but still doing the things that the franchise is known for in terms of pulling you into combat instead of encouraging you to turtle away. And the shield is really cool in that regard, where one, you can block, you know, put it in front of you and block some projectiles if you need that to create that space for yourself. But then also when you have it up, if you hit shoot trigger, it will dash you toward an enemy. So you're really able to close space quickly that way. And it really keeps you in the fight, because you're doing this thing where, you know, you're trying to shield and then you're like, oh, I'm going to shoot. But you still have the shield up and you're like, oh, crap, now I'm in the middle of it. I just dashed into the middle of 14 guys. This is going to get hairy real quick. And then it has the moments of the Simon Says, you know, this color means this, this color means that, this, kill them like this, you get the ammo, do this, it gets you health, do this to do the parry on the green thing, it sends it back to you. And it creates this really fun, you know, I talk about this all the time on this show, but it feels like you are playing the piano, right? You're able to hit that zen space of playing a game. Bobby, kind of like what you're talking about for First Berserker.
First Berserker, yeah.
where when you're doing everything right, you don't even realize what your fingers are doing. You kind of get into that flow state. And Doom the Dark Ages really encourages a lot of that. That play style, I think, is awesome. It looks great. It was running at a solid 60 frames per second. Really technically sound and beautiful and kind of that showpiece for what you'd expect for these Doom games. That said, of the three new parts of the franchise that are introduced in Doom the Dark Ages, being the sandboxy levels and then the dragon and then the mech, I would say of the three, the sandbox part was my favorite. The way that would work and what we played, and that's what we were allowed to capture, what you can see video of in my newsletter, is it's very video gamey. I use this term a lot, right? It's a video game ass video game, and it doesn't shy away from it. There is an enemy in that sandbox area that you cannot do damage to until you kill enough other enemies. Like, there's no reason for it. It's just a video game. And like, this guy's protected.
That's how hell works, dude.
Clearly you've never been. Just wait.
And you based know, on I, that's based on real research into hell.
Yeah, they opened the portal to hell and everything. And that's what the documentary is going to say.
I would love for that to be true, and I hope to never find out. and it just, you know, it has that approach. It doesn't shy away from it. It leans into it. And it's super fun, and it becomes chaotic, and it feels fresh in a new way, even though you're doing the things you've been doing. But the space and how you navigate through it through this horde of enemies felt really compelling. The dragon graphically looked cool. There are parts that feel kind of Star Foxy or Panzer Dragoon-esque, where you're kind of just on rails doing these things. And then you get into these broader environments where you essentially go into a hover and have an auto lock, and you're just doing a little bit of the Simon Says-ing. It's like, oh, here's the thing I need to dodge. Perfect dodge. Now my shoot has a little more power and I shoot at the turret. Wait for the next thing. Perfect dodge. Shoot at the turret. Wait for the... And for the complexity and fun of the boots on the ground Doom guy moments, I found the dragon back to be less exciting. Yes, it's a change of pace. Yes, it's that palate cleanse. But if I were doing that straight for an hour or two, I think of what I played, the parts that I saw, it felt pretty repetitive and not quite as engaging. What made it awesome, though, was that in those moments, you could then land part of the part we were playing. You were attacking these larger ships. And after you got their defenses down, you would land your dragon on the ship, jump off your dragon, and then you have to like rip the power core out on foot. So it got you back onto that boots on the ground. So in that moment, I think they're doing a really nice palate cleanse, kind of let the main core gameplay rest. Alex Solman and I did a whole feeling this episode about that, that folks, patrons can find. And I think it works in that regard. The mech, I would say, from what I played, was even less fun than the dragon.
Oh, no.
It was slow. Yeah. It was boring. It was punch, punch, perfect dodge, super punch. Walk through buildings as they tumble because I'm big. I'm not, it's just, okay, like a very narrow defined path. Big demon, punch, punch, perfect dodge.
Are you at least squashing punch. Little demons with your feetsies?
No, you're making demons scurry, but there's not like that you see, you know, like cool, like wiping out the horde as you bring your big sword down or whatever to clear out the enemies that used to be tough before. And now you're just laying waste to.
That's what that you want.
That's kind of like when Mario gets big and just runs through the level, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's what you want. And that might be in the game, but that is not what we saw or played. It's like, oh, there's these giant demons. You got to be giant, and now you're playing a slow version of Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Was it like, okay, here's a level where you're a mech, or is it like you have the option of leaping into the mech and doing it this way?
In our demo, it was very much, here's the level where you're a mech. Here's the level where we're going to show off the dragon. I would guess that that is also how the game is, that there are these pre-scripted areas where you do that thing, not...
Right.
Do it on foot or do it in the mech. I think it's like going to be
Halo's tank level.
Yes, I think it is. And it's going to be those palate cleansing things. And the other big addition to this game that we saw some of, but not tons of, is the story. They say that Doom the Dark Ages is going to be the most narrative heavy.
Wow, yes. Surprise.
Whereas 2016 in Eternal, the story was just, I mean, there's a lot of it there, but it was lore, right? You were finding these text things. And here they're doing the big budget animated cutscenes. And I think that could be hit or miss. What we saw was clearly well produced, but I don't know if I want, and I don't know if there's this much of it, but I don't know if I want Metal Gear 4 solid amount of cutscenes in my Doom game. Yeah.
I suspect it won't be that, but
I suspect it won't be that either. But it is a focus, and it's a bigger focus than they say it's a bigger focus than it's ever been. And so I'm curious if it's too much or just the right amount, because
anything more than zero is more than
I read the stuff in Eternal in 2016. I enjoyed reading it, but you know, gun to my children's head, tell me the plot of Doom Eternal.
That's my exactly kids are what dead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. Would you compare this new game to maybe like Rage in terms of like how maybe they're telling the story?
Oh, that's interesting, man. I haven't played Rage in forever.
I remember that it was really cool, and it wasn't too heavy on story. It was just kind of like, do this, go to this place, do a cutscene, fight some people, maybe a little bit of exposition, and then you move on.
Yeah, I think that my guess is that Doom the Dark Ages has more story. Like the story we saw, I'll be vague, even though I think it was early in the game, but it was like, you know, Destiny-esque, we got to do the thing because its attacking is coming, and here's 10 proper nouns about the world we live in, and summon the, you know, Goobly Glops to come do the thing that we got to do to protect the rift. And it's like different creatures and different things all working together in this tent. And, you know, it's like, oh, there's a movie happening here, right? There's clearly this narrative. And I'm curious how well that works in the full game. But man, Jeff, the boots on the ground, like classic Doom guy stuff, I think I might like Dark Ages even more than I liked 2016. It felt really
good.
That
was probably my favorite too, yeah.
You talked a little bit about the shield, but like you were digging the shield. Because that's, to me, that might be my biggest question mark is, am I going to love the shield?
Yeah, I really did dig the shield. Again, from what we saw, the first level, it was, you know, not unlocked and upgraded. And then later, in a later level in the sandbox area, we have the shield where we can Captain America it or Kratos it. And that moment, so what you're doing is there are enemies... Or one way I should say you interact with it, there are enemies that have armor on it. And when you shoot them with your weapons, which are awesome Doom creative weapons, you know, the thing where you're like loading a skull into the gun as it's
grinding
ammo.
Yeah.
It's like really cool weapons. There's a weapon that is a ball, like a mace, whatever those are called, but it like, it's a gun mace, you know, so it's like, it's slow but powerful.
What if also gun though? Like,
yes.
It'd also be gun.
Yes. And you're like, thunk, out this, you know, metal ball with spikes. And then it's got this chain on. You pull it back.
Oh, that's
really, really cool. And when these enemies have armor on it, you need to, I think the term they used was superheat the armor. So you're shooting it and you see the armor turn red. And then you can take your shield and Captain America at it and the armor shatters.
That's cool.
And then you pull
your
shield back, or some of the smaller imps, you know, you can just shield your way through and it like cuts through four of them and it will kind of stay lodged there a la Kratos. And then you can pull it back and take out two others as you're thunking your mace gun or whatever it was called. Really cool. And then when you don't have your shield, you then can't block or do the shield dash. So again, there's kind of this cat and mouse, Simon Says, how you want to approach it. And using the shield to just dash into an enemy, a group of small enemies, and then just go to town with a double-barreled shotgun on the bigger enemies, and then time the block right on the green projectiles to send it back. All of that stuff felt really, really, really good.
It's awesome. There you have it. Doom the Dark Ages.
It's soon.
Thunk
too.
Your mace gun. I think that should be their
put on
their
the box
subtitle.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they wanted is thunk your mace gun, which is one, not what the gun is called, and two, nowhere did they ever say thunk. That's
thunk
what they
your
wanted
mace
the
gun,
takeaway
baby.
To be.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right. I wanted to talk about a game that I've been playing. It's in early access, so it is not a complete game, but it is in early access on Game Pass. So you can check it out now if you are a Game Pass subscriber. I played it on Game Pass on PC. It's a game that I've had my eye on for a while. It's called 33 Immortals. Not to be confused with Expedition 33. It's a big year for 33s. I'm just going to say that. The 33
That's
is
old I am. I just turned 33.
You wish. You wish. Anyway, 33 Immortals looks like Hades and plays similar in some respects. It is a roguelite, but it also aims to give you the experience of an MMO raid all the time. And that's what drew me to this game even more than my love of, you know, third-person action roguelites. I am not currently playing an MMO, but I'm a guy that has spent a lot of my life loving MMOs. And one of the things I love about MMOs is that experience of getting into a big dungeon or raid experience with a lot of other people. And that sense of teamwork, that sense of like, we all have to leverage our A game to take down this massive boss together. It is a really cool experience that's really kind of unlike anything else in gaming for me. And 33 Immortals is like, hey, we're just going to do that all the time. The 33 and 33 Immortals means that at any given time, you could be playing with 32 other people. And you are in these large maps with enemies all around in a, you know, in a Diablo or Hades kind of way, much larger maps than Hades ever has. But you're in this large, almost actually closer to something like a Vampire Survivor, actually. Although, you know, it's not auto combat in any sense, but it is that sort of size where you're roaming around these large environments and there's just enemies all over the place that will be attacking you. And you'll have a bunch of other players also in that space with you, roaming around doing things. You can be with them or not be with them as you choose. But you are taking down enemies and opening up these doors that then are limited to only six players at a time. So anytime one of these doors unlocks, everybody sort of like rushes to the door to try to be one of the six to get in there, because then you are in a smaller Hades-sized arena, and it's like harder enemies and cooler rewards. You defeat that room, and the chests unlock in there, and you get some cool stuff, and then you leave that room, and you keep doing that, taking down these rooms. They get harder and harder until at last you finally unlock the chance to – I mean, other things happen in the interim, but to simplify it, you basically do that until – the boss unlocks, and then everybody rushes to do the boss, this crazy boss raid. And the boss battles are incredible, like, you know, epic raid level boss battles with stuff blasting all over the place, ads coming in, and, you know, 33 of your or 32 of your closest friends trying to all do the same thing. So it really is delivering that streamlined experience. Like it strips away all the other MMOE stuff and just gets to that, which is cool. And I think the biggest strength of 33 Immortals, first of all, I mean, mechanically, it's very fun to play. It captures that third person action roguelite thing
quickly.
Effectively, like the weapons are fun. I think there's
MMOE and that people are doing different roles, or are we all kind of the same person?
As it stands, well, there's four weapons in the game as of now. I believe four. I suspect they'll add more as the game goes on, but each of those weapons plays completely differently, and you can get in the same way you would in a Hades or in a, you know, a Dead Cells or any other of these games. You can get a build. You can, you know, as you're sort of doing the rooms and getting you're unlocking different perks and leveling yourself up and purchasing things with currency that you're getting from chests and stuff. And so you're sort of preparing yourself for the boss by building how you want your character to be. So there's variation there, quite a lot of variation, especially based on the different weapons. The weapons are different, but there aren't specific roles like you would have in an MMO, like healer and tank and DPS. There is a sort of tanky weapon. There is more DPS-y weapons. So it sort of half steps toward that, but it isn't like fully defined. Like my job in the raid is to heal everybody. But what it does do really, really well is incentivize cooperation in some really clever ways. Everybody and all the, I guess you would say classes, your class is defined by what weapon you're using. All of the ability kits have in them a co-op like Uber attack or Uber ability. Sometimes it's a defensive one, like giving everybody shields or slowing down enemies or like raining death arrows from the sky. But the way those are accomplished is that mine comes off of a cooldown and I can trigger it, and then it creates these like runes on the ground that the other players have to step into and activate. And what makes that
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And what makes that especially fun and challenging is that most of the attacks that you're dealing with are, you know, those typical like big swath of like, I'm about to do this attack. And so the bad guy, you know, has like a strip on the ground. Like, don't stand in the red strip. Yeah. And so there's all these kind of death areas that you don't want to stand in. So literally like placing my runes on the ground and asking people to come over and stand in them has its own dangers associated with it, right? So it's a really fun push and pull of, you know, the constant movement that you get from something like a Hades, the bad guys making places where you can't stand or you're about to get hurt, with us throwing stuff, positive stuff on the ground too, where you want them to stand in it. So it's really a fun minute to minute action experience. And other ways that they encourage cooperation, like you can purchase health. Like if you're low on health, there's areas, all these little nodes around the map where you can purchase health. And you do that by, you know, spending currency that you're picking up. But if anybody else is standing around you, they also get healed. So it and there's lots of buffs where it's like based on how many people are around you at any given time. Not only that, but even the sort of rank and file, just fodder bad guys are really bullet spongy. They're really they really take a lot of effort to take down. You're not shooting and mowing down bad guys. It takes some doing to just take down even one single non-boss bad guy. So it means that multiple people teaming up and focusing attacks on the enemies is beneficial and just sort of happens on its own. Right? Because it's not like there's one guy who's just awesome and, you know, tearing down all the bad guys, or even just me. I'm not just, you know, doing my own thing off here in the corner. It really helps to be sticking with the group. And one of the cool thing is I was playing on controller on PC, and they map the map to a trigger, which is I had not really ever seen before, but it really makes sense in 33 Immortals, because I was constantly just like tapping the trigger, popping the map up just to see where everybody was. Cause you're seeing these other 33 icons all moving around the map, and you can see like, oh, everybody's sort of congregating over here, or there's a grouping of other players over here. And if you get yourself sort of lost in the weeds and alone, it's not how you want to be playing this game. So having that map on a trigger, on a button that you're constantly able to just flick it up and check in on where the action is happening means that it's easy for you to find out where everybody is. It's easy for you to stay with the group. It's easy for you to sort of coordinate. And, you know, there's lots of emotes and stuff as well. But it just facilitates this cooperation and this sort of group play. I was not playing with anybody I knew. I was just jumping in solo, but I did feel like there was a lot of just organic cooperation happening. And that's what you want out of a game like this, right? You want to be able, because I don't know 32 people that I'm going to be able to coordinate on a Tuesday night to play with, right? Yeah. So I'm going to almost always, even if you're playing with a group, you can have like a party as a subset of the 33, but you want even playing with randos to be cooperative. And it really is. I was very impressed with this game. Again, still in early access, so there's a lot more game there to go. And I only played the first level, which is like the boss is Lucifer, and he's like this three-headed demon guy. It's awesome. But there's two other, I don't want to say biomes, but I guess it's just levels that I have not played. And I suspect that the final game will have even more. But I think there's a lot of promise right now for 33 Immortals. And if you're a Game Pass subscriber, no reason not to give it a shot now. I think it's really cool, really fun game that I'm very much enjoying.
That's cool.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Bobby Paschalides, it's so much fun chatting with you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun. I love talking games, so yeah.
Yeah.
Happy let us to check know out where, 33 Immortals.
Yeah, let all the folks know where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you're doing online.
Yeah, you can check consolecreatures.com. You can check us on Blue Sky, whatever your social feeds are, Spotify, YouTube, Console Creatures. We're there. We got a weekly podcast, video reviews, video podcasts, everything.
Awesome. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, as I mentioned, I have some footage of me playing Doom the Dark Ages that you can find at my newsletter, which is christianspicer.substack.com. I'm playing with some video newsletters there. You can also find I had my Assassin's Creed review there with some footage of me actually playing as well. And what else? There was something else I was going to mention. I don't remember what it was. I don't remember, so it must not be that important. It's like my anniversary or something, and I just don't know it. No, it's not. Jeff, what about you?
It's our anniversary, Christian.
No, I know when that is, and I purposely block it out of my mind. That's it's easy on Nintendo it's today. Years.
It's on Nintendo today, too.
Yeah, it was on Nintendo, today. I paid a lot of money for that so you would see it, and now I'm on the socials at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have other podcasts for you to check out, including the Filmcast, talking about movies and TV shows. This week we are talking about what? A movie.
Our anniversary.
literally last night. What was it? I don't remember. I saw it last night. My brain is completely blank.
It was either that traumatizing or that good.
Hang on.
I can't wait to listen to that episode of the Filmcast, and Jeff's limerick is like, a movie that will stay with me. I will never forget thee.
Actually, really good. It was a movie called Death of a Unicorn, which is a really interesting kind of quirky, comedic, violent movie. We're talking about it on the Filmcast. You can check that out wherever you get podcasts. Also, We Have Concerns is a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can check that out at wehaveconcerns.com as well. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Bobby, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Listen to this podcast. No, go for walks. It's nice out. We're in Canada, at least. It's starting to be nice and warm. So go for a walk. Listen to some good audiobooks.
I love it. That's very, very cool. I love listening to audiobooks when I exercise as well. It gets me motivated. Yeah. I make it so that I can't hear the next part of the story unless I'm out exercising. So I you know, getting out, walking, running, whatever you're going to do. Love that. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Very related. Bobby and I are on the same page. Spring has sprung. You can kind of do this all the time, but with people getting back outside again, don't forget your sunscreen. They make it easy now. Yep. They make really nice sunscreens. You know, it's not like the goop you wore when you were a kid and you felt like you were doused in Nickelodeon slime. It's just like they make nice sunscreens. It's built in with lotion, so you can just do it kind of your daily, put your lotion on your face, get ready for the day, protect yourself against those harsh UV rays as we get back out into the world and embrace these nice spring days. Don't forget your sunscreen.
I'm going to stay on the sort of outdoor-y tip. Ladies and gentlemen, I need your help. You perhaps remember this a couple of years ago. I am raising money for the Providence Cancer Institute. They focus on a number of different kinds of cancers. The goal this year is to raise $20,000. How am I doing it? Well, I am going to run without sleeping. I'm doing Hood to Coast again this year in Portland, Oregon. Myself and a team of other dudes.
32 immortals?
Fewer, but and probably mortal. And all too mortal, actually. It's
you used the wrong key, went through the wrong door. You got a small subset and a hard challenge ahead. Yeah.
It's so mortal that our body is hurt quite a lot. We are going to be running the relay from Mount Hood all the way to the coast and seaside. It's 200 miles. We do it in, I don't know, about 36, 38 hours, nonstop, no sleep. It's a relay. It's hard. It's fun. And it's for a great cause. And when I'm out there, when I'm running, when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I got to get back out and run another 8 miles, I would love your support, your push to get me out that door, get me with my running shoes on and running in the middle of the night in the pitch black darkness with my reflector tape on. The way you can do that is by going to runjeffrun.com, RUNJEFFRUN.com, and donate. Help us raise money. All of this goes to charity. It is our fundraising efforts. I mean, there's a lot of crazy things going on in the world right now and a lot of ways that you can try to help. This is one of the things that I try to do. And I have told my team that I can raise $20,000 and they scoffed. And I said, no, you don't understand. I have the power of the DLC audience behind me. There's no amount too small, folks. If you can throw $1, $5, $20, whatever it is that you can push to this cause, I would be super grateful. I think it will make a big difference. RunJeffRun.com. It won't be the last time you'll hear me mention it because the run isn't happening until August, but we get to start that fundraising early and get going. RunJeffRun.com. Please help me raise some money for a great cause. All right, we got a listener-suggested parting gift as well. This comes from our friend of the show, Scott from The Gaming Outsider. He's been our guest on the show. He wanted to throw a game that we may not be aware of into our awareness. He says, hey guys, I came across a game I think you might be interested in checking out. It's called Whisker Squadron Survivor. It's available on Steam or PS5. The quick elevator pitch is, what if Star Fox were a roguelike? And I'm having a ton of fun with it. The game has you complete waves of enemies along a path, much like Slay the Spire, where you choose your own path. The more enemies you destroy, the more scrap you collect to acquire upgrades, a la Vampire Survivors. What I love is that the upgrades are not simply add more damage or shield, but instead drastically change your gameplay strategies each run. It makes each time you play a unique experience and forces you out of your comfort zone in a good way. One run, you might focus on combos, while another might have you boosting through narrow passages to keep your energy in check. It's a delightful little game made by an indie studio in northern Wisconsin, and I think you'd really enjoy it. Thanks for reading. Keep up the great work on DLC, and have a great remainder of your weekend. Thank you, Scott. I think I saw this, and I was a bit turned off by the Whisker Squadron of it all, the anthropomorphized animals. But it's great to hear that the actual gameplay is deep and satisfying. So maybe I will give this a check because there's some love in my heart for the old StarCraft, and I do love roguelikes.
Star Fox.
What, I said StarCraft. I love StarCraft as well, but Star Fox. All right. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's it for this week. I want to thank Bobby Paschalitis and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merch for our show at our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. We'll see you next week. Oh, can't forget to thank our patrons. They deserve our biggest thanks. Thank you, patrons. You're the best. We really appreciate you. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.